Welcome in to Talking Terps, a show which covers University of Maryland basketball and football. Talking Terps is part of BSL Radio. Baltimore Sports and Life is dedicated to analysis and discussion on the Baltimore Orioles, the Baltimore Ravens, and the Terrapins. The site has a team of writers providing coverage of those teams and houses live streaming content weekly. Join the conversations on the message board, like BSL on Facebook, and follow BSL on Twitter.
Welcome into Talking Terps. It's March 21st. We're the weekend removed from Maryland basketball ending their 22-23 season. I'm here with BSL Terps analyst Zach Kiesel to talk all about it. Zach, how are we doing?
I'm doing good, Chris. How are you?
Doing well. No shame losing to the number one overall seed, and the defensive effort was there for Maryland, but no chance of beating Alabama with Reese's foul trouble and Maryland's shooting issues. So what was your take in the loss to the Crimson Tide?
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit on the two biggest things, and that was the shooting issues and Reese's foul trouble. And, you know, it kind of was an example of what we've seen all year from this team, where they have really good effort defensively, but at times they really struggle to shoot the ball and find good shots and hit good shots. And then Julian Reese and the front court get into foul trouble, and obviously when they can't stay on the court, that's a bad thing. Reese only played 20 minutes, and yet he led the team in scoring with 14 points, and that's a recipe for disaster. If a guy who's only playing 20 minutes and scoring less than 15 points is leading your team in scoring. They looked really good offensively when he was in the game. The problem is he was hardly ever in the game, especially for long stretches of time. I mean, Willard would try to, you know, sneak him in for a couple minutes here and there. But at the end of the day, he just wasn't able to stay on the court for long stretches of time. And for the first time, one of the first times all year, he picked up his third foul in the first half, even though Willard was playing him. He had done a decent job most of the year of playing with two fouls and not picking up a third before halftime. But he, you know, as with it seemed like everything in this game on the offensive end, it went poorly for Maryland. 35% from the field. They only attempted 8 threes, which I thought was interesting. You know, all year we've seen them struggle from beyond the arc, especially earlier in the year, but they kept shooting. And in this one, it seemed like they were a little more tentative to shoot those threes. And I felt like, you know, if you're going to beat Alabama, you got to get hot, and you got to get hot from beyond the arc at some point. So you probably just need to chuck shots up. But out-rebounded 44-32. That was a trend two years ago when Maryland played Alabama. So that obviously played a big impact. And look, Reese not being in the game, that really hurts your ability to snag rebounds. Only 57% from the free throw line. They got to the line, they just didn't hit their shots. So a lot of things went poorly. And I think it went kind of the way that we talked about it last week, where it's, you know, we expected Maryland to be able to hang in the game if they got to this matchup against Alabama because of their defense. But at the end of the day, their ability to finish the game was going to come down to their shooting, and it just didn't happen. They were able to stay in the game for one half, and then the wheels kind of fell off in the second half. They just weren't able to find good shots, and credit to Alabama. These guys that they have are super athletic and super long, and these guys, their wings, it seems like everybody's got at least a 6'7", 6'8", wingspan, and that makes it a lot easier to defend, especially on the perimeter.
Yeah, we went into the game, ESPN's matchup indicator, I think they were giving the Terps like a 20% chance. Basically a puncher's chance. That's exactly what we thought. Facing number one overall seed, it's, you know, you're expecting a loss, but frankly, any decent Maryland team is always going to have a chance versus anyone. And, you know, Maryland had a puncher's chance. There was going to be attrition, and if you lose Reese to foul trouble, you don't have, you know, you didn't have another option there. Also, you know, I'm always going to have respect for Scott and Hart coming back, and I think they would be better appreciated on a better Maryland team if they were just role players versus what you're more depending on. But while Maryland in the Big Ten is, if not the most athletic team, they're right there. What you saw was an athletic difference between Alabama and Maryland, and particularly the depth of Alabama, and that became an issue. There were times when Maryland, with Reese out of the game, really struggled to just find a shot, you know, of where could they go. And so that was you know, a pretty telling and a reminder of, like, for Maryland, where they want to go and get back into that national conversation. It's, you know, starting with this incoming recruiting class, it's finding that next caliber of athlete and also hitting the portal here and, you know, some of the additions Maryland's going to need. So in that last show, we discussed the possibility of Young returning. He has that capability. We both agree it seems unlikely. I guess I had forgot that with the extra, frankly, COVID year, that Hart and Scott also have the same option. I imagine you feel similarly about their chances of coming back.
Yeah, I would say it's unlikely. I don't think any of them is impossible. I heard at least Jameer Young after the game say he was going to sit down with his family and make the decision. These are all guys that are good enough to make some money playing overseas next year. I don't think any of them, even if they came back, really have NBA potential. They're very good college players who could have very nice careers overseas and make a good living in a fun city playing somewhere else. Now, they could all decide that they want to run it back next year, add some depth pieces, and all come back. The scholarship math then gets kind of interesting. We saw Ike Cornish announce he was going to enter the transfer portal. That wasn't unexpected. We talked about him last week. There are now two scholarship spots open, not counting Young, Hart, or Scott. Now, what I'm hearing, I haven't heard specific names. What I'm hearing is two other guys are expected to transfer. So that leaves you with four open scholarships. If all three of these guys come back, that only allows for one transfer. So that's when where the math kind of gets interesting and where Willard is going to have to look at his roster and say, if these guys want to come back, if all three of them want to come back and he has two transfers he wants to add, he may have to tell one, hey, we don't have room for you here. And that's the issue that a lot of teams are going to have to deal with this COVID year, where you have all these guys with a sixth, even seventh year of eligibility. There was a guy in the tournament, I forget what team it was. They said he's 26, almost 27 years old. So that's kind of what you're seeing here. And it wasn't BYU. You know, that's kind of what, and it wasn't the military either. It's kind of what you're seeing here, right? Is that these guys have all of these years of eligibility. And it's going to be up to the coaches. And we've seen that with Mike Locksley, where he's had issues with, you know, how many open scholarships are there? And he's had to kind of nudge guys out the door and give them opportunities to play elsewhere. So that's going to be something to watch for. But I would lean towards Hart and Scott also not coming back. But I also don't think it's impossible that they find their way back into Maryland's season.
Yeah, definitely interesting to watch there. You mentioned the other two guys you would expect to transfer. I think you're thinking about Ravaz and Zuba, but we'll see what happens with either one of them. I imagine they have the option. It's going to be their decision, but neither one have touched the court. You would think, you know, maybe they're move on where they can find some additional playing time. The Zuba, obviously, the Ukrainian national, maybe there's more at play there. Maybe Maryland just, you know, you're welcome to have the scholarship. And he was somebody that I believe originally was at Arizona State. And, you know, was a four-star at some levels, was young. I think he was the youngest player in the Pac-12 when he signed. You know, maybe there's something there, but couldn't find any playing time again this year. So, you know, I think we've anticipated he would be on the move. We'll see. We've heard of a couple of targets so far in the portal. Towson's Timberlake, obviously people locally will have some name recognition there. And then Florida's Kawasi Reeves. What can you tell us about them?
Yeah, so Nicholas Timberlake out of Towson, he's exactly the type of guy that I think this team needs and would be a massive addition in the portal. He's a sharp shooter, can play the two or the three, more of a two just because he's six four, but could play the three at times. He made 42% of his three-point attempts this year. So I don't think a single player on Maryland's roster even sniffed 42%. So that's exactly the type of guy you're looking for, average 18 points a game. The issue is that you're competing with pretty much every team in the country for him. He's getting interest from North Carolina, Indiana, UCLA. Those are just Googling his name right now. Those are the tools on the front page of Google. So everybody's going to be after this kid because he's really good. Hopefully the local angle helps with Maryland and the fact that they should be able to offering him a starting spot right off the bat. But that's the type of guy that this team needs, a reliable shooter from beyond the arc who can stretch the court for him. He would be fantastic and really long, good defensively as well. Reeves from Florida, he spent the last 2 years at Florida, was a really highly ranked recruit coming out of high school. Top 50 guy, can play the one, the two, or the threes, like 6'6", real long, good defensively, really good motor, but hasn't lived up to his potential at Florida. Now, they did undergo a coaching change this year. He was in the portal before this year. Todd Golden convinced him to come back. I think he only started like 7 games, averaged 9 points a game, hasn't shot the ball very well throughout his career. You hope that maybe a change of scenery would help him. He has a really good release on his shot. It just hasn't translated to college yet. Again, there's a ton of schools vying for his services just because of his ranking coming out of high school. So you're going to be competing at the highest level of the portal for him as well. But, you know, I think either of those guys as kind of wing guards, I don't know that you want to rely on Reeves as a starting point guard. You know, if Young doesn't come back, you're going to be looking for somebody to take over that role. Reeves really hasn't done it in college. He's more of an off-ball guy. So you're still probably looking for a point guard unless you want to go to Ian Martinez in that role. But either of those guys would be massive additions. I think Timberlake is really the guy that Maryland ought to key on. That's exactly the type of guy that you want to add. And then that way you're not relying so heavily on a guy like Jamie Kaiser as a freshman. He can be that guy, but you don't necessarily want to rely on him as a freshman. Bring in the transfer, experienced guy, sharp shooter. I think he'd be a fantastic addition. So definitely those two names are ones that we've seen pop up, and we're just going to see a ton more pop up in the next week or two when things really get going.
Let's shift over to football. Maryland recently lost talents on both lines. On the offensive line, Mason Lunsford. And then on the D-line, Anthony Booker. Which line do you currently feel better about?
Yeah, it's funny. When I first read this question, when you sent out the outline, I was like, wow, defensive line, right? Because like the offensive line, you've lost three starters. But then kind of looking at the roster, I think I feel a little more confident in the offensive line. You return DJ Glaze and Colton Deary. So those are two starters coming back and the starter at center. So that's good. You add Corey Bullock and Marcus Dumerville. Bullock out of North Carolina Central and Dumerville out of LSU in the portal. Both really solid additions and good step into starting roles. And then Andre Roy, who they've really liked ever since he came in as a freshman, stole him away from Penn State as a recruit. Was a three-star, but a high three-star. And they've really liked him in camp. And he's been really impressive. And he may be able to... And really, they've been grooming him to take over the left tackle spot. So I feel pretty good about the offensive line. Obviously, depth is a concern. It seems like it's always a concern. So you just hope they can stay healthy throughout spring and summer camps. The defensive line, yeah, you lose Booker. And then you also lost Nasili Kite, Finau, and China Rose. So that's four basically starters, and we've seen them use a heavy rotation on the defensive line. I think that'll continue. You do get Tommy Akinbosode, Henry Chibuzi, Tazy Johnson, Quayshon Fuller. Those guys all come back. We've also seen Brian Williams going back to his time when he was just the defensive line coach before he took over as the defensive coordinator. We've seen him be able to get more out of guys who aren't necessarily highly recruited. He puts them in situations to succeed. They go two or three deep at every position along the D line. So I'm not necessarily worried about the defensive line, but I do think I'd probably lean towards the offensive line. I'm not overly concerned about either, though. I think they'll be fine. They took big strides there last year, and I think that'll continue this season.
With these late departures, I'm kind of expecting Loxley maybe to find a few more additions before summer.
Yeah, I'm not sure how the scholarship math works out. I'd have to go in and dig through that. We're going to see guys leave in the spring. It's just kind of the way it goes. We're going to see guys added. The portal giveth and that taketh away. Now, hopefully you don't lose starters, you would hope, at that point. But, yeah, hopefully he can pick up a couple depth additions, guys who can make an impact. I think it's easier for guys to make an impact quicker on the defensive line because you can rotate them in and out as opposed to offense. you're going to find a starter, you hope it's defense rather than offense.
Talk about a couple of coaching changes. Terps hired Josh Gattis as their offensive coordinator. What were your thoughts on the hire?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because there was drama like 4 years ago when Loxley was first hired and Gattis was supposed to be the offensive coordinator. Apparently he accepted the job and then like a day or two later jumped to go to Michigan. It's interesting. I think it shows that Loxley doesn't hold a grudge. So I guess that's good. There's no bad blood between them, at least not enough to prohibit them from wanting to work together every day. But a good coach. I mean, obviously they coached together at Alabama, won the Broyles Award in 2021 at Michigan, went to Miami, be their offensive coordinator, really struggled. The team struggled this year and he was fired. But a guy that Loxley obviously has connections with, which is important because this really is Loxley's offense. If you look at what they've run since he was hired, whether it's Scotty Montgomery, Dan Enos, it's Loxley's offense. The formations are the same. The plays are the same. The terminology was slightly different between Montgomery and Enos, but for the most part, it's the same offense. They also add Kevin Sumlin as a co-offensive coordinator, tight ends coach, associate head coach. I think that's a big addition, especially if the rumors about Loxley calling plays this season are true, because that's going to give him kind of a right-hand man on the sideline for more of the administrative head coaching stuff. It's still TBD how that all shakes out with the play calling. They're all going to be very involved early in the
season. That's two big name additions with Gattis and Sumlin. And yeah. Right, so, like experience, we've talked a lot in previous years about Maryland and the need to invest into their coaching staff, and that is a way to potentially close the gap on your, the rest of the East, Eastern Division and the Big Ten. But so to see those additions, I know there's questions about, Gattis and his most recent stop in the production there, but former top assistant of the year and, someone of his experience. So names as well, and just a recognition, I think, what that brings to the staff as a whole and to the players, not just your existing team, but recruits as well, just looking and seeing, hey, I got this experienced staff here. I think that does make a difference.
Yeah, and I think what it really stems from is Loxley's involvement with, he developed that association of black football coaches. And they've done really good work. He's had attention from ESPN on that and trying to create more opportunities for black football coaches. And, the connections that he's built, because he's really reached out across the entire country and coaching sphere, whether it's NFL, college, high school. The alliance that he's built is massive. And I think now you're starting to see the fruits of that when it comes to Maryland football is, well, now he's able to pull from those connections. Even connections, obviously he had the connection with Gattis in Alabama, but with Sumlin, that's a connection that he's built, I assume, through that alliance. And it's allowed Maryland to have some really good high-level coaches, and that helps with recruiting. You say, hey, remember Kevin Sumlin as the head coach at Arizona and Texas A&M? I mean, this guy's kind of a big deal, and he's our associate head coach and tight ends coach. And Josh Gattis, I mean, everybody knows who this guy is. So I think that's only going to help with recruiting, and both of them known as very good recruiters as well.
And I believe Maryland's the only major college with a African-American head coach, athletic director, and president. Yep. So
big deal.
Yeah, it is a big deal. Departure-wise, running backs coach Elijah Brooks went to Virginia Tech, and recruiting analyst Gary Warfram left as well. Impacts of those departures?
Yeah, I mean, those are two big losses. Brooks was excellent as a running backs coach, both as a recruiter and a positional coach. You look at some of the running backs that have come through his room in the last few years. It's a strange move to me because it's lateral. And I assume he got more money from Virginia Tech, but it's interesting where you invest more heavily in guys like Sumlin and Gattis, but you lose out on a money battle to to Elijah Brooks. That's a little strange. Maybe he wanted to go elsewhere, but again, it's a lateral move. He's just the running back coach down there. So
right. Then you wonder just like how much of a dollar difference is there in just keeping your staff and not finding that. But
right. So that's a little strange. You hope that it doesn't result in any players leaving. I mean, Ramon Brown was a big addition, 4-star. He should play a big role this season as a running back for Maryland, but he was committed to Virginia Tech before he flipped to Maryland. So you just hope that, you know, Roman Hemby is safe and Colby McDonald is safe and Antoine Littleton, all these guys that are going to play big roles in the running back room this year. You just hope that they don't flip and go elsewhere, as we've seen with other positional coaches. I mean, you saw Mike Miller take the job down in Charlotte. They lose two tight ends, one of them to Charlotte, and then the other, CJ Dupree, to what Alabama he committed to. So, I mean, and then the recruiting analyst, Gary Wortham, I think it's understated what a massive role the recruiting staff has in any college football program. And Loxley's built his up just like every other team around the country. And these guys, I mean, they're the ones that have the most contact with the recruits. They're the ones hosting them on visits and keeping up with them on social media and all of that stuff. So that is a big, big loss. Now, Loxley, I trust his judgment as far as a replacement, but definitely not easy to lose such a top recruiting analyst like that.
You had pointed out on the board that there were 8 recruits who enrolled early and participated in the bowl practices. Among them, is there anybody in line for early playing time?
Yeah, so I think the two tight ends that they brought in, Dylan Wade and Rico Walker. Walker was kind of an athlete, could play D-line or tight end. They're going to use him as a tight end, at least to start his career at Maryland. I think those two guys you talk about, I just mentioned Weston Wolf and CJ Dupree, big impact tight ends that both left. So behind Corey Dyches this year, you're going to look at probably one of those two guys as the second option at the tight end position. And Loxley does like to use two tight end sets when he wants to run the ball and be a little bit more physical. So we'll see how that shakes out. But I think those two guys, and then on the defensive end, I think both of the defensive linemen, Dylan Fontas and DJ Samuels. Samuels more of an edge rusher that they'll use as an outside linebacker hybrid. But I think both of those guys, we talked about the attrition on the defensive line. So I think those guys you're going to be looking to step up. They could potentially play big roles this season.
And lastly for you tonight, Zach, is there a player or two that was on the roster last year, maybe saw minimal or no playing time that you think is a chance to emerge in this 23 season?
Yeah, so I'll give you one on both sides of the ball. So offensively, I think Octavian Smith Jr. is something as a guy to look at. Wide receiver, former 4-star recruit, was a freshman last season, can play the slot, really good with the ball in his hands, explosive. Didn't play a ton last year. He did have that absolutely ridiculous catch in the bowl game for a touchdown on that fade route in the corner of the end zone. That's hopefully his introduction to Maryland fans, because with the loss of Dante Demas and Rakeem Jarrett, you're going to be looking for somebody to step up. And Ty Felton was kind of the fourth option behind the top three guys last season. I think you're going to look at Smith as kind of the number three in the slot. They use a ton of three wide receiver sets. He's going to be a big option on third downs. And then he can also do stuff down the field as well. He's 6'1", but he plays taller than that. He can really go up and get it. And then on the defensive end, another guy was a freshman last season, Caleb Wheatland, inside linebacker. He was fantastic in practices last season. He saw a little bit of the field, but not a ton. There were a lot of linebackers on the roster. He'll still be kind of buried behind some of the guys ahead of him, like Ruben Hippolyte. Just 6 tackles last year, but he's been very impressive in practice. And I think as a depth piece, a second stringer, he should absolutely have the ability to get it onto the field, especially on third downs, because he has a ton of speed. It really moves sideline to sideline, good in coverage. He's a guy that could definitely play a role this season.
That's Talking Terps of the Week. Come join the discussions at the site, BaltimoreSportsAndLife.com. Message board is active. As Zach said, the portal is going to be filling up, so plenty of news there. And then we'll be shifting to more football coverage as we get here into the spring. Spring officially is on the calendar. The spring date is probably right around the corner. So looking forward to some more news there. We'll fill it up the next few weeks with talk about football. We'll get into the positions, and then we'll break for the summer until we get towards camp. But, Zach, thanks for joining. We'll catch you all again soon. Take care.